The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Sarah Barrington of Verici DX, a next-generation medical diagnostics firm focusing on the global kidney transplant market. So big welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be back on.
Yeah, well, many congrats on today's positive and better than expected Q1 trading update, with test volumes increasing sequentially quarter on quarter 32%. So maybe we could start there. I don't suppose you could just quickly take us through what's been driving that pretty strong top line growth.
Well, you know, I think when we talked last time, I think my closing comments were that I was kind of excited about this year. And So it is. And the reason I was excited is that last year we got the opportunity to use our fundraise to go out and hire some salespeople. You know, nothing happens without sales. So, you know, we did warn everybody that it takes a little time to onboard. This is not a, you know, straight out the gate type of engagement. It's quite a complex sale. But we brought on some incredibly deep experienced people, the right people for the job, and so it's showing. So we were expecting to show some growth this year, and we are. So we beat our own expectations. So that was always pleasing. And you know, we've got a plan for the rest of the year, but it's a great start to an exciting year.
Yeah, could you just talk through the sort of like increasing the number of sort of like, you know, transplant centres, and also where you have the champion users, the doctors, the physicians, their sort of like reordering cadence going forward, or what you've seen on the ground. It'll give investors a sort of like a view of what they should expect going forward as you then, you know, invest in your sales team and increase that number of transplant centres.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of equations that we always talk about, and you'll have to excuse me for some of my my pet phrases, right? So I always talk about the first thing you have to do is earn your trust points in healthcare. Obviously, healthcare is designed to be slow adopting with innovation, and we as patients want that. You don't want to have, was it the president's recommending bleach for COVID, but you know, you don't want latest fads for stuff. So we always recognize that it's kind of a slow burn. And I always think about it as like your loyalty points. A salesperson will go into a center, they'll talk to a clinician, and they kind of establish trust. And every time they go in, that's why it's not a right out the gate, you know, wow, I've got a great product. Great, I'll take it. You know, this is something that you have to have data and trust points and logistics and a sort of steadiness about it that you wouldn't find in other sectors. So, you know, in so far as you've got that, what you're looking for is when you go into a center, you're looking for your first champion. And they may order, you know, onesie, twosies. I want to try you out. I want to see it in my hands. I know that you've got a validation. It's published. I know it performs well. But let me see what it's like in my my center, my hands, my clinical practice. You know, how do I use this? They'll bring in what we call an MSL, which is somebody who comes to talk to them clinician to clinician. So that they can say, how would I use this in my practice? And so you go back and you have another conversation, then you go back and you talk about, and then they talk to their colleagues and say, hey, I'm trying this out. Do you want to try it? You're trying to get into the center logistically as well. That's no small feat. How to get into the systems, how to get into the processes, how to get into phlebotomy. And so we see this sort of period of time where it may be onesie, twosies, then you're building up trust and you're trying to get clinicians. And at a certain point, you get the recurring. Okay, I know how I'm going to use this. I might use this for example, DGF, one of the subpopulations. And then they'll say, great, I really like it, but I understand it works really well with BKV. I'll try it in that time. So you get that kind of rollout. After that point, when you've got a recurring and a use and you're established and you get into the systems, then we look to go on to protocol. So another center went on proper protocol this quarter. We've got more in the works, you know, but that's at the point where the clinicians say, Oh no, we're just going to embed it into our practice. We're going to say we will use it at this point in this case. So it's
And if
more mandated. There's none of this sort of choice. Oh, I got to remember that. What was the name of that test? Oh yeah. Now it's like, oh, we automatically order. It's like being on prescription.
Yeah, it becomes entrenched in the clinical pathway that the doctor then automatically just says, right, okay, we want this test. In terms of those ones with the sort of the champion physicians, how many tests are they using per transplant? Because you did talk about last time the opportunity at some point to use this test for a physician in more than, more than once for a transplant.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this is it's an interesting equation. And there is, of course, this is transplant pool, so there's never an easy answer, right? You know me. And the reason for that is because there are different testing frequencies depending on what's going on. So there is what I call the time-based testing, which says, okay, I'd like to, and this is how cell-free DNA has been used primarily. Which is to say, look, test us every month after the first 3 months or something like that. And so there is that kind of time-based. But there is what we call a for cause, which is, okay, I think something's going on. I'd like to test it a bit more. When you get to that situation, you may be in something where they might say for a small period of time, they might test you weekly. Okay, I really don't want this to get out of control. It's very early on. I want to make sure that this transplant's going to stick. I'll do it t weekly. So that's more tied to an event or a concern or something like that. So what we did is we had a look at protocols that we saw in the industry, and we did what we call a weighted average. So many are just being monitored for time. So many are in this kind of subpopulation, so many in that population. And we looked at the cadence of testing, and we worked out that there was probably a weighted average of 12 times per patient if
Twelve
you were
times.
trying to do an addressable market. Now, not all of them are going to get that. So just before we get completely overwhelm the system there. But that is what would be possible, on a weighted average basis. So we do see quite a lot, and it would not be unreasonable to say that the majority are getting, 7 in the first year.
Wow. Okay, so there's a big addressable market. Just taking a step back, I mentioned, sorry, in the RNS that you've now got sort of like a coverage of the number of transplants, sort of the volume of it is 20%, and I think if I remember to recall, it was 16% back in October. By the end of sort of 2026, what's the sort of coverage that you would hope to achieve, and how many more sales guys or people do you think you need to get to that, in terms of your optimum level of coverage?
Yeah, so we work on a basis. There are about 180 addressable centres. You've got more than that, and then some of these centres, by the way, have satellite offices. So there's a little bit confusion about what is the definition of a centre. But let's say there's 180. Then what you would to get kind of more or less 100% of all transplants. And we've talked in the past about how many salespeople, what support that you would have. That is what we call internally, the old phrasing of hunting and farming, right? So if we're bringing on a new center, we're hunting, and you kind of need every time you get a salesperson on with a new territory, they're going to be predominantly hunting, but then you're going to farm. So at some point, the investment, if we wanted to invest in hunting for 100%, then I would be looking to, let me see, where are we? Increase my sales team and the support by an order of 4 times
Right.
of where we are right now. So that would be some sort of investment.
Yeah.
There, and we always say that you can't expect very much in the first 6 months. So that's quite a heavy cost burden up front, but then you would have national coverage. Or you do a combination where you do that a bit more slowly, but you then look at this, how am I now going to farm? How do I get from the onesie twosies? I've now got access to those number of transplants. How can I get really penetrated into that, the testing cadence of that center to really address them? So we have the opportunity to farm that 20% a little bit more before we would go all out to farm, to hunt to 100%. So it's a little bit of a balance. So,
Right.
and I think that that really is a question of how much do we want to invest up front to accelerate future growth, or do we go a little bit more steady? And as ever, it's a little bit of a combination of the two.
Okay, good. And then just in terms of sort of the cash runway, I know you mentioned sort of like I think it was the back end of last year that the cash runway was H2 of 2026. Is that still sort of like the timescales we're talking about?
Yeah, that's right. I think last fundraise there was a sort of desire to see how we would really roll out. This was kind of post Medicare, the idea that we could now start, growing and get adopted in the market. And I think folks wanted to see, how do you do? And so that cash runway was designed to do exactly that. And I think we're still on track for that. And I think we've hit the, well, how do you do? Well, I think we can say that the market is going to adopt this test.
Okay, good. And then just really finally, if you just talk us through sort of like how investors should think about the year ahead 2026. I mean, you've knocked the ball out of the park in Q1. Could people still have big grins over their face knocking the ball out of the park going forward with a bit of luck?
My team say that's what they're aiming to do. They like to put the smile on my face. So, let's support them and say yes. I think this is an exciting year. This is the point. I think it's always interesting, for AIM, which has traditionally supported this kind of growth story, to get to revenue growth and break even and all of that kind of conversation. And I'd like to say, we'd like to be a poster child for that. This is a pivotal moment for us in terms of that revenue growth, and as we march on to profitability. For us, this is an exciting year on that revenue growth story.
Brilliant. And I'll just highlight to investors the house broker Singers have a target price on the stock of 2.9p. And I think the shares are about half a p at the moment. So significant upside if those forecasts are or those expectations are hit. So thanks again, Sarah. And look forward in touching base again at the prelims towards the end of May.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.